We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
All right, I'm here. My name's Gary Parish. I'm talking to you from 54th and Broadway, Midtown Manhattan, New York City. Brad Carson in studio back in Memphis producing a program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruptions.
Her daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings.
And I hope you didn't think today would be the day Penny Hardaway started doing anything other than answering questions as honestly as he knows how to do it, because fascinating quote on radio this morning in advance of tonight's game against Temple inside FedEx Forum. We'll talk about the game, the league race, and that quote about Kevin Davenport here in just a couple of minutes. But first, real quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 4:20, Keith Easterwood is my local basketball expert. He's your local basketball expert. He is the nation's leading authority, Hobos, Heroes, Street Corner Clowns. No Sam Sausagehead on a personal level. He's going to join me here in about 20 minutes. We'll talk to him about basketball, sure, but I'll also ask him about his trip to Las Vegas. He was sending me text messages and pictures all from all over Las Vegas.
Were they appropriate?
Some maybe not so much. I don't know. We'll talk to Easterwood at 4:20. When I finish that segment, I'll do four notable stories at 4:44, at which point we're going to discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, our king and savior, LeBron James, was inside FedEx Forum last night. He got a triple-double, 24 points, 12 rebounds, 11 assists, but the Lakers still lost 110-105 to the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah.
So that's two straight losses by the Lakers to lottery teams. Now three games back of the Spurs for eighth in the West with 22 games left. The 538 blog now says there's an 82% chance that LeBron James is going to miss the playoffs for the first time since 2005. We'll get into that around 4:44. Neat moment last night, Staples Center. Doc Rivers grabbed the microphone, final seconds, and asked the crowd to celebrate Dirk Nowitzki in what will likely be his final game against the Clippers. Just a really cool gesture. I'll tell you more about that a little later on this hour. Anthony Davis was benched by New Orleans for the entire fourth quarter last night. The Pelicans lost by a point to the Sixers, so that worked well for New Orleans. They protected their biggest trade asset and also took an L in a season that is now built around tanking. So great job, Pelicans. We'll get into that just before 5 o'clock. And Trae Young went big again last night. 36 points, 8 assists against the Rockets. He's now averaging 17.5 points, 7.7 assists per game, having a really nice rookie season. We'll talk about that during four notable stories, 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins is just like always. Then I will eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. Got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with Tiger basketball because a big game inside FedEx Forum tonight. It's Temple at Memphis. Now, Temple comes in 20-7 overall, 10-4 in the American, ranked 71st at KenPom, 51st in the NCAA's net rankings. They are projected to be in the NCAA tournament right now, according to some bracketologists. Meantime, Memphis is 17-11 overall, 9-6 in the American, ranked 74th at KenPom, 60th in the net. So these are two comparable teams, even if Temple has the superior resume. There's really not much difference between Memphis and Temple at KenPom. Really not much difference in Memphis and Temple in the net rankings. There's only difference in the resumes. That's why Temple can reasonably be projected to be an at-large team in the NCAA tournament right now. Memphis, not so much. Temple is one of the teams Memphis is chasing if the goal is to get a top four seed in the AAC tournament. And we have established that as one of the goals a while back. And long as we're speaking honestly, it's unlikely that that's going to happen.
Right.
Because even if they beat Temple tonight to move to 10-6 in the league, They Memphis still has to go to Cincinnati, where they're probably going to be about a double-digit underdog. It doesn't mean they can't win that game, but they'll be overwhelming underdogs in that game. In fact, KenPom right now says Memphis at Cincinnati, it only gives Memphis a 20% chance to win the game. It's got a projected score of 78-68. So if for the sake of the conversation, you'll acknowledge that no matter what happens tonight, Memphis is unlikely to get a win at Cincinnati this weekend. That means they're going to have seven losses in the league, even if they win their final game of the regular season. And seven losses in the league is probably going to put you outside of the top four, simply because I don't think Central Florida and Temple, regardless of what happens tonight, I don't think they're going to get to seven losses. The projections right now at KenPom got Houston finishing in the league 16-2, Cincinnati 14-4, Central Florida 12-6, Temple 12-6, those teams taking up the three spot and the four spot, and Memphis at 11-7. Now, Memphis goes wins tonight and then somehow goes wins at Cincinnati. Now we got an entirely different conversation, but the truth is the Tigers probably going to finish just outside of the top four in the American Athletic Conference standings. In what is year one of the Penny Hardaway era. Either way, big game tonight because it is a game against one of the teams you're chasing. And if you do still have dreams about maybe putting together an at-large resume, obviously it starts with this one. You probably need the Cincinnati win as well to get that conversation started. But it won't even be a conversation if you can't beat Temple at home. Tigers are a 4.5-point underdog. The total is 161. Tip a little later than normal, 8 o'clock Central. You can watch it if you're not going on ESPNU. And the game will be played after Penny Hardaway was on radio this morning. He was on with Wolo and Peter, that's Dave Woloshin and Peter Edmiston, and he was asked a question about Kevin Davenport, because Kevin Davenport has gone from somebody who looked like the best player on this team to somebody who is no longer a reliable player on this team. I mean, he opens the season with 30 points in a win over Tennessee Tech. He scored double digits in each of Memphis's first five games. He got 31 against Tennessee. He got 25 against Wichita State in the first AAC game of the season. He got 26 against UConn earlier this month, but he backed that with a three-point performance against East Carolina. Then he got 10-10 in back-to-back games against Central Florida and Tulane, but this past weekend at Wichita State, played 36 minutes. He was 0 of 7 from the field, 0 of 3 from three-point range. He finished with 6 points, 6 rebounds. So Penny was asked about Kevin Davenport, and here's the quote. It's long, so bear with me. Quote, "Well, I think Kevin is just a free-spirited kid. He's a kid that really, to us as coaches, he's not into basketball like that. He got a scholarship to come here, but he'd choose watching anything else in the world over basketball. He's not a basketball junkie. He doesn't know the history of the game, doesn't care to know the history of the game. He just knows that he's very athletic and that he can play. So you have to motivate him every day just to have a motor. We have to motivate him every day just to try to study film. He doesn't like film. He doesn't like to study. He really doesn't feel like practicing a lot. There's a lot that goes into that. And to try to reach him has been very difficult all season. He's one of the best kids in the world. It's just he's not a basketball junkie. He didn't care to learn the things it takes for us to be successful until now. Now he's starting to ask questions at the end of the season, like yesterday in film session. He was asking questions for stuff we already told him what to do 6 months ago. It's like he just wasn't interested. He wasn't interested in the style. It seems like he came here to play for Coach Tubby and the way that Coach Tubby allowed him to play and allowed him to be. He wasn't challenged this much physically or mentally to do things on every possession, so that kind of frustrated him and he kind of shut down. In December, he was a monster. He was all over the place rebounding and knocking down threes, playing the best basketball of his career, but then he got bored again because as we started losing, we started putting pressure on him to do the things we know he can do, but he wants to do it on his own time. I've never coached a player like Kevin in my life with his athletic ability to do the things he did against Yale, Tennessee Tech, Tennessee, and then for him to play 18 minutes and have no points or rebounds and just be okay with it, that's just who Kevin Davenport is," end quote. So a lot to unpack there. Brad Carson, first, your thoughts. Fascinating quote, no matter how you feel about it. Is this a coach going too far or a coach being brutally honest?
This is tough. He's a senior. I don't think he's a second-round pick, so I don't think that Penny, by saying this, is jeopardizing any potential for a scout or somebody to...
Well, let me stop you there, because I saw... I saw some of that on Twitter. Yeah. Like, you know, Penny talking about him this way right. could cost Keevan Davenport opportunities in the NBA or even opportunities at whatever professional level he might be equipped to play. And I would just say that
no,
that's just simply not true.
Right.
Because this is the type of stuff that anybody in the NBA would be aware of. If you just did a very basic level
right.
of research on Keevan Davenport, the truth is NBA scouts talk to these head coaches, and it is in the head coach's best interest to be honest with them about stuff like this. Otherwise, they can't trust you going forward. So
yeah.
I don't want to say that coaches trash their own players to NBA people, mm-hmm. but this is very much like what privately, mm-hmm. an NBA scout would ask about, and privately, a college basketball coach would say, like, I know for a fact. I shouldn't say I know for a fact, mm-hmm. but
probably
you know, when NBA people would ask Duke, because this is the question I get from NBA people about potential superstars all the time. When they ask me, mm-hmm. to the extent that they might be interested in what I think,
sure.
or they know I know somebody or know a staff, they'll say, if he doesn't, he's supposed to be a star, right? I said, yeah, he projects that way. If he's not a star, what will be the reason?
Right.
Why, if he's not a star, what will be the reason? And so if you were to ask the Duke staff that last year about Marvin Bagley, who's having a great rookie season.
Sure.
If you were to say, okay, listen, you believe in Marvin Bagley, right? They say, of course we believe in Marvin Bagley. We think he's going to be good. Yeah, you should take him in the top two. Okay, if he doesn't become a star, though, what will be the reason?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer would be, doesn't really have a great feel for the game.
Yeah.
Like, he's so gifted, just an incredible second jumper. Things come easy to him. He's a uniquely talented young man, but he doesn't have a great feel for the game. It doesn't mean that he can't develop that, but he gets by on ability as opposed to outthinking other people on the court. If he doesn't make it as a star, that'll be the reason. That's the type of thing the Duke staff would honestly tell an NBA scout. It doesn't mean they're trashing him. It just means they're offering an honest assessment. My point being this, this is very public, but the idea that this is going to be something that cost Keevan professionally,
yeah.
it's just not true, because this is the type of thing that would be said behind closed doors if it weren't already said on radio.
Well, I think that's an important point. That's why I said that first before I answered your question, because with that in mind, my answer is, yeah, it's fine, because we know that Penny is going to answer publicly. Honestly, he calls out players. He calls out other coaches, for God's sake. So my answer is, I'm fine with it. It's fine, and maybe it'll motivate him and get him better down the line. And he will be less lackadaisical, I guess.
I'd say a couple of things. One, if this were an example of a coach talking this way about a player and just constantly being negative or honest in a somewhat critical way. Then maybe you go, man, this coach never has anything good to say about anybody. But we're talking about a coach who literally just a few days ago said Jeremiah Martin was having the best 7-game stretch of any player in University of Memphis basketball history.
Right.
Penny Hardaway included. So I don't know whether that's true or not. I'm not a historian. But, we are operating in the same, weak span, where the same head coach who's offering this assessment of Keevan Davenport offered an assessment of a guy who's playing well right now, incredibly well right now, who is the reigning name today, Jeremiah Martin, the CBS Sports National Player of the Week. In the same week span that Penny is talking this way about Keevan Davenport, he talked that way about Jeremiah Martin. So the pattern between the two things is, when he was asked about Jeremiah Martin, he told you exactly what he thinks about Jeremiah Martin. That he's a leader, that he's operating at a high level, that he's working like crazy, that he's chasing dreams, and that he's putting together one of the best 7-game stretches any University of Memphis basketball player has ever seen. He was asked a question about Jeremiah Martin. He answered it as honestly as he knew how to do. He was asked a question today about Keevan Davenport. He took the exact same approach. It's just that the circumstances are different. So I don't have a problem with it at all. It is unusual that you don't really hear a coach talk at that length about a player in that way too often. But, this is nothing new. This is not groundbreaking territory. We've been saying it since the preseason. One of the most interesting things about Penny Hardaway isn't that he doesn't dress like other head coaches. It's that he doesn't speak like other head coaches. You ask him a question and he'll tell you exactly what he thinks. And that's all he did here. And the truth is, I promise you, there's nothing that if Kevin Davenport was listening, and given that he doesn't appear to care about sports at all, I doubt he was. Perhaps he read it on social media, though.
Yeah.
I promise you, there's nothing in that answer that hasn't been said right to his face 50 times by now.
Yeah.
You know, they've by all accounts, been trying to push buttons with him from the jump, and they can't make him care the way they want him to care, the way that they care, the way that most of us think we'd care if we were him. I have no problem with that this assessment of a player, as long as it's not mean-spirited. And right. There's nothing mean-spirited about this. I do think a coach can cross the line if he's mean-spirited about a player. Like, critical and mean. Saying unnecessarily mean things. But that's not this. In fact, he went out of his way to talk about how gifted he is, to talk about how awesome he's been in moments, to talk about how he is now, you know, engaging us a little bit, asking questions in film. I mean, this is stuff that we tried to talk about 6 months ago. No idea why it took him till yesterday to start asking questions about these things, but we're glad he's finally asking them now. Like, that's better than the alternative. Better late than never. So he did, while giving a pretty rough assessment of Kevin Davenport as a basketball player, still here and there offer compliments to sort of soften whatever criticism is there. So I'm never going to be the person who gets bored with one cliche after another from a coach and then be critical of a coach for offering honest assessments, real answers to actual questions. It's refreshing. I'm not going to agree with every word Penny says. Like, when he says he thinks other staffs are jealous of his staff's NBA background, I don't agree with that. At least it's never been brought to my attention. I think other staffs are intrigued by what's happening at Memphis right now, but I've never sensed any sort of real jealousy. At least that's not been brought to me. So I don't agree with everything that Penny says, but I don't disagree with anything he said today about Kevin Davenport. And, you know, and I'm confident that it's been said right to Kevin Davenport's face every week since Penny and that staff took over. There's nothing new here. The only new thing about it is that it was said publicly in a pretty extensive quote. And the point he makes about a lack of love for basketball, that's a very real thing in the sport. He says he doesn't care, you know, about the history of the game. He doesn't care to know about the history of the game. You know, he just knows that he's athletic and that he can play. So he plays. But he doesn't want it the way a different type of person wants it. And that's another thing that NBA scouts, not about Kevin, because I don't think he's a legitimate NBA prospect, but it's another thing NBA scouts try to find out about players. Why do they play? Do they play because they love it? Or do they play because they've always been good at it? This is especially tricky with big men, because often, you know, somebody who's 6'10 has been tall most of their lives, and somebody saw them at a young age and said, hey, you're taller than everybody else your age. You should play basketball. So they play basketball, and then they're good at it, and then they keep playing basketball, but they don't love it. You know, they don't love to play. They just play because they were tall. And then they were good, and then they kept playing. And then maybe it put them through school, so there was like a real reward for continuing to do it, but they don't love it. Honestly, like that was one of the critiques of Austin Nichols in his time at Memphis. I don't know whether it was fair or unfair, but I do know that that's what Josh Passer and his staff thought, that he didn't love it, that he loved being a college student, but didn't love basketball. And again, I don't know whether that's true or not. I just know that was their perception of things at the time. And Kevin seems to be somebody who is on that end of the spectrum, who like plays because he's naturally gifted in a way that allows him to play basketball at a high level at times. But he'd rather be doing something else. You know, it's Saturday night, 10 o'clock. You got an option to watch cartoons or go get in the gym. Which one are you going to do? Kevin Durant might go get in the gym. You might watch cartoons. none of this stuff is unique to Keevan Davenport, assuming that it's all true and there's no reason to think it's not. He's one of countless, high major basketball players who play for reasons that run counter to what the main reason ought to be, or at least the main reason coaches want it to be. It's because you love it. Are you playing because you can go to school for free, or are you playing because you love it? Are you playing because you want to be a millionaire someday, or are you playing because you love it? Kevin Durant is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. If Kevin Durant was never paid another penny, he'd still be in the gym every day. He'd still be playing basketball every day. He loves it. Absolutely loves it. There are other guys who don't. I've got former NBA players I work with. Some of them still hoop every day, love to play. Others hadn't picked up a basketball since they retired. I don't think Danny Granger, who obviously was an all-star with the Pacers, I think last time I asked Danny this, he said he had not played pickup basketball since the day he retired from the NBA.
He didn't.
He got to a point where he just didn't love playing anymore.
Yeah.
He loved the paycheck, but got to a point where he was just like, I don't love to play. I don't love to practice. I don't love to do this. Part of it was surgery induced. Like his body started to fail, and so it was actually painful to do it. But he got to a point. He was like, I don't need to go play in the gym. I don't need to be the third guy off some NBA team's bench. I've made enough money. I'm just going to enjoy my life. I do not love playing basketball the way I need to love to play basketball to keep playing. I'll never forget. And then we'll get to Keith Easterwood here momentarily. Because it's, I think, rooted in the same stuff. I had a mutual friend with a pretty accomplished author of books when I was very, very young, like 23, 24. It was right after the Albert Means story hit. And I was being approached about writing a book on it. And I was trying to decide, do I want to do this? And so I was bouncing the idea off people. And I had a friend who was friends with this guy who was a pretty accomplished, New York Times bestselling author of sports books. And he said, let me put you in touch with him. He can, he can talk you through it. And maybe then you'll have a little more clarity on what you think you want to do. I said, okay, that'd be great. So I get the guy's number and I call him. And the first question out of his mouth, he said, okay, let me ask you a question first. Before you even tell him, he didn't even know what I was thinking about doing a book on. He said, before we get into this and you walk me through it, let me ask you a question right now. Because I think we can either proceed with this conversation or be done with it in a matter of 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I said, okay, pop it. And he said, would you write this book even if you didn't make a penny? Would you do it for nothing? And I thought about it for a second, and I said, well, no. He said, then don't write the book.
Right.
He said, if you don't love it, if you don't want to do it, if it's something that you wouldn't, unless you were getting paid, you don't want to do it.
Yep.
It's you're going to hate every minute of it, and it's not going to be worth it to you. Do not do it. He said, every book I've written, I would write it for free. I haven't written them for free. I've made lots of money doing it. And you might make lots of money doing it too, but you will hate your life. You'll hate it. And you won't enjoy the time at all. Maybe you'll get a paycheck at the end that'll make it worthwhile, but you'll hate it.
Good advice.
And I said, I never wrote the book. Yeah. And to this day, I mean, I've been approached about writing other books.
I know.
I have never written a book. I don't think I'll ever write a book because I would not enjoy it. The process would not be fun for me. It would not be thrilling for me. It would feel like a homework assignment every day. Yeah. And what that tells me is I shouldn't write books. Here's the truth. I love preparing for radio. I love preparing for the podcast. I would not like working on a book. I enjoy the process of those other things. I would not enjoy the process of writing a book. So I should never write a book. This is very similar. Like Keevan Davenport. If you didn't have a scholarship, had no chance of ever making a penny playing basketball, would you still play? It appears the answer is no. Right. He doesn't love it like that, and that's a problem. It doesn't mean that he, can't go out and still have a nice finish to his college career, but it does mean there's a limit on what you can be. when you don't have that passion for whatever you're doing, in this case, basketball. And I think more than anything, that's the point Penny Hardaway was trying to make earlier today. I'll talk to Keith Eastwood about it next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show. Live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
This ain't a wave or a phase, cause all that fades. This lifestyle's forever when you made. They tweet about the length I made them wait. What the you expect when it got a cape and he's great?
Our king and savior LeBron James was inside FedEx Forum last night. Got a triple-double, but the Lakers lost. And now the 538 blog says there is an 82% chance that LeBron James is going to miss the playoffs this season for the first time since 2005. We'll talk NBA in the next segment. Jeff Calkins, a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, he is my local basketball expert. He's your local basketball expert. Nation's leading authority. Hobos, heroes, street corner clowns. He's got a personal relationship with Sam Sausagehead. It's the legend, Keith Eastwood. Make him the big interview.
The Big Interview, presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. It's the one and only Keith Eastwood.
He ran.
Yep.
Die, Brad, die.
Local basketball expert talking hobos, heroes, and street corner clowns on 92.9's Gary Parish Show.
Eastwood, what's up with it?
Well, when I'm the big interview, you tell Mr. Barron I want extra money, okay?
Ooh, sounds like he might have had a rough time out in Las Vegas.
You know what? And we had texted while I was there. The Cosmopolitan is beautiful for a lot of reasons, plus the amenities that go along with it. We did a Cirque de la Soul at Mandalay Bay, and so you see what
Cirque
you
du Soleil, Keith? Is it Cirque du Soleil?
Well, whatever the hell it is, I don't know.
Okay. And so you don't know,
I thought he meant Cirque du Soleil. I was just clarifying.
You can die, okay?
I'm sorry.
So you see all this great wealth, and you see there's a tremendous amount of homeless people out there, so it's a lot of stuff going on, but we get in early Wednesday. It was cold as all get out, so we drove the 7 Magic Mile, which you haven't seen it since. Rocks somebody painted acrylic in the desert, in which we got out, and I'm like, it's too damn cold for me to walk all the way across this desert. And so luckily she was like, just take my picture here, let's get back in the car. So we go to the Strat because I had all this free play and I had free buffets. And so we eat, because I don't eat like 24 hours because I get on a plane, because I can't fit in a damn plane bathroom, so I just don't do it. And no, it's a true story. And I watch these fat people get in the bathroom. I'm like, what y'all doing in there? Because you ain't doing no business in there because you too fat to sit on the damn toilet. And so she puts $20 in a machine at the Strat and hits 600. And once she hits, she'll stop. She did it at Tunica. And so we called the Four Queens, which wound up being a good place to stay because of Fremont Street. And so we go down there. The lady said, you can check in at 1. We get there at 2 because we killed time. We went to Walgreens, bought liquor and all that good stuff. And so she says that this machine, a slot machine to me is like a guinea pig can play it because there's no thought process to it. You just push the button and whatever happens, happens. So that's why I like to play blackjack. So I go mess off some money playing blackjack. I lost the first time. I subsequently won a couple times. And so here she comes. She's got a ticket. She just hit $1,200 on this damn machine. She had no idea what she was doing. So this is all Wednesday. We ain't even checked into the hotel yet. So anyway, they let us put our baggage in a closet. They said the room would be ready whenever. So we go up at 3:45. They guaranteed it by 4. And there's a maid in the hallway. So I go in the room and, like, somebody had left this room so nasty. And I'm like, hey, lady. She said, well, the people here are staying over. I said, well, they just gave us the room. So anyway, I'm mad now, because I've been up for 18 hours. I called the manager. He said, well, come downstairs and I'll bump you up, which wound up being really nice because we literally could look out the window and see all the freaks on Fremont Street, which was kind of cool. And so I think I sent you the picture the guy passed out in the hallway, didn't I?
Yes, I got that one.
Yeah. So Wednesday morning, whatever day, when you go out there, I don't know, Thursday morning at 6 o'clock, I roll over and I'm going to go play blackjack. Well, there's a guy. I don't know if I put him on Twitter or not. he was asleep on the 10th floor of the Four Queens. How he got in that corner, I don't know. Normally, I won't take pictures of people. He was snoring so loud. My wife had already found two or three people passed out, and she'll always take pictures, put them in a collage or whatever. So, anyway, I go down. I won a little money playing blackjack, and about 11, she and I go to lunch. If you like soul food, there's a place across the street from the Strat, I think I mentioned before, called M&M Soul Food. I mean, it's like your grandmama's cooking there. I got liver and onions and all that good stuff. Anyway, so we go back. I'd be damned. She puts 20 in a machine, and like the second spin hit 1600. I'm like,
okay.
So I just told, I said, you know what? I'm going to quit playing. You can play. And we kind of quit gambling after that, although I did play blackjack one more again. But to sum the trip up, we had to board at 6:15 Saturday morning. And I woke up at 5:30.
Oh, you missed that then, right?
Yeah, right. So I just started calling. I called the hotel. They were like, don't worry about it. They comped me a room. We had a rental car. I called them, whatever. They were cool about it. Then Southwest became the issue. And so Southwest, so people know if you're traveling, they're going through a labor issue with their mechanics union. And so they've already canceled in the last week or so like 200 flights. So a flight left Vegas at 8:15 nonstop. I like to fly nonstop. And then our flight left at 8:25 nonstop. But when you click on to do your boarding pass, it says flight canceled. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. I'm not going to cuss, Brad. And so you got to go stand this line with 800 people. You hung over. You've been in Vegas for 3 days. And the guy says, oh, we canceled your flight because of weather. So I pulled the weather app up. I said, bro, it is nothing but sunny in Atlanta, and you had a flight leave 10 minutes, or, well, 8:15, whatever. And he said, sir, that's what I was told to tell you. So to make a long story short, we sit in the airport, and I drank doubles that morning, and then we flew to New Orleans and sat for 4 hours, and I drank more doubles, and then they finally got us to Atlanta probably 10 o'clock that night. And so next time, I think I'm going to go through Nashville. But we had a good time. She won like $3,000. She bought her Louis Vuitton. She had fun. And I won about $400 playing blackjack. And, you know, you go out there, it's just – and people like the guys that work for me, and when I moved here, it really shocked me. Like, they're – none of them – I asked them the other day, I said, when the last time y'all flown? Only one person that works for me out of the 30 has even flown. I'm like, I don't get that. And so – you know, you go, you do, you broaden your horizons, you see, I mean, there are women, and I say this, and people are probably judgmental, and the purist and whatever will be like, oh, like, there were women on Fremont, they had panties and, like, little stars on their nipples, that's all the clothes they had on, but they were selling pictures, and, you know, I just took a picture from afar, and then you got double-jointed people doing weird stuff, you got whatever, and I talked to one of them guys, so they have to have a permit. And then every 20 minutes, there's circles on the ground on Fremont Street, and you have to rotate like every 20 minutes. Who controls that? I have no idea. But Vegas is wild. I can't imagine. I only did it one time. I cannot imagine taking a youth basketball team to Vegas. We had one group from Chattanooga do it 2 years ago. They'll never do it again because you can't keep up with all the debauchery and all the crap going on. So if you go, and I was shocked too by the number of people who had children on Fremont. Maybe it's okay to expose them to that at an early age. I don't know. You know, I do have some sense of right and wrong about myself, but we had a ball. It was good to get away. I took an extra vacation day yesterday, and I'm back on the grind today.
I'm talking to Keith Easterwood here on 92.9 FM ESPN. He's on Twitter at Easterwood Keith. He's the host of the Keith Easterwood Show. You can find that via Apple Podcast. You can subscribe via Apple Podcast or KeithEasterwood.com.
I just taped with Preston Laird. Preston has impressed me, Gary, and he's talked to you, I know, because I gave him your phone number. But he has been methodical about his grind and about his rise in the coaching ranks. And when you talk to him, and if you listen to the podcast, and I've known him, I'm trying to remember, my son played football with him. He played quarterback, but the kid is so polished and articulate, and I know he wants to get back on this side of the Mississippi. But they're just guys like, and then we can talk about Will Wade if you want to. But like the morning I had coffee with Will Wade at the Reed House here in Chattanooga, with like 10 minutes, I said, bro, you're about to be a millionaire. Then I go to his practices. His practices are off the damn chain. And I've been blessed, you know, not to be the dead horse, but Patino, obviously Cal, and I mean, Denny Crum, and you go through whoever. A lot had to do because I did the pre and post game for the Tiger basketball teams for a while because Cal helped me get that gig. But, you know, and so I don't know what's going on with this tape, but what I've heard and what I know, college coaches have used this term, and you and I have talked about it with me over the years when I had good players. I will do whatever I have to do to be involved. Now, that's open to interpretation. So if you say it to a parent, you say it to this guy Christian, whoever his asshole is, and they're all ratting on each other now, but – and he did make that comment, supposedly, I'll do whatever I got to do to be involved. Now, does that mean I'm going to go get you a Big Mac? Does that mean I'm going to get you tickets to a game? Does that mean I'm going to get you $10,000? I mean, I'm going to get a booster to give you more or a shoe company to do whatever? But I just can't think, or I have a hard time, because I like these guys. I like Forbes. I like Stan Jones at Florida State, guys that I've known for years. But you can't my wife's trying to call me. You can't – I just can't believe that he did something that's going to jeopardize his career, not only at LSU, but going forward.
Well, the best thing for Will, at least at this point, based on what we know, what's been made public, is that the player he and Christian Dawkins were discussing on a wiretap where Will, you know, tells Christian Dawkins, you know, hold on, I got to go shut the door. So he's, like, shutting his office door so nobody can hear him. And he comes back and says – I can get you what you need, but it's got to work, or something along those lines. The implication is like, listen, I hear you. We'll get this done, but, you know, we got to make sure we get this done. The best thing for Will is that he never actually got a commitment from that player.
Right.
That player is now committed somewhere else. And so if you're Will Wade, I think the defense, as long as there's nothing else on the wiretap and there's nothing else incriminating, I think if you're Will Wade, you say in a more legal way, but you basically make the argument of, I could say I'm going to murder my neighbor, but, and you're not going to take me to jail for that unless I actually do it. I was telling Christian Dawkins what he wanted to hear in that moment because that's what I've learned over the years worked. You got to keep people around. You tell them what you want to hear, what they want to hear. But I was never actually going to do anything in violation of NCAA rules to get this player or any other player. And I think whether that's believable or not, I don't know, but it's your best bet. And so the more interesting thing than that wiretap is going to be when he and Sean Miller and whoever else the defense calls, when they get him under oath on a stand and they start asking questions, not about just dealings with Christian Dawkins, but about dealings throughout college basketball in general, because, and I've said this many times over the past 24 hours as I've been on other shows, people asking me about it, I'm not talking strictly about Sean Miller or Will Wade or anybody else, just in general. If you're a high major coach who has successfully enrolled five-star prospects, you're in a scary place being under, with few exceptions and maybe no exceptions. You are in a scary place when you're placed under oath and told you better answer these things honestly or else. And then you start being asked questions about, you know, high stakes college basketball recruiting. You might not say something that'll incriminate you, but you probably will end up admitting to some sort of NCAA violation.
Yeah. I mean, him and Chris, you could have met at a massage parlor, but that's another story. You know, how do you be a millionaire and you go to a damn massage parlor? If I had that kind of money, if I was doing that, which I'd never done that, they would be coming to see me. But that's another story. Did you see the transcript of Penny's interview today about Kevon?
I did. He was on with Peter Emiston and Dave Volition, my friends over at Sports 56.
Right.
And it was a pretty honest, some might say, brutally honest assessment of Kevon Davenport as a basketball player. If you're asking me if I saw it, that means you saw it. What did you think of it?
I thought it was beautiful, and I'll say this. The year we won the national championship, which you and Brad helped me congratulate and jubilate and all that good stuff, when we came back, they were 16 and under. When we came back at 17, we started attracting different guys because – the media here, I did radio, we got rings, the mayor. And as time has gone on, I really didn't realize, because we had, I say this with some humility, the teams I had in Memphis had a tremendous amount of success, and you know that. But they had never had happened in Chattanooga that somebody won a true AAU national championship. They had won the Bill Jones Invitational, the Brad Parsons Invitational, whatever. But so we attracted different animals, and so a 6'9 kid shows up from Georgia, and so I talked to the parents, talked to the kids. 6'9 in this area is rare. The kid didn't want to play no basketball. And so one night in Atlanta, 5'9 guys were making layups on him, and I just got so pissed. And I've done this before, and usually it evokes some response of going out and playing harder. So in the huddle, I challenged him. And I didn't punch him. I probably should have knocked the hell out of him, as I've done before. But I did challenge him. That was the last night he ever played with us. So to coach a guy who really doesn't want to play, he's playing because he's tall, doesn't want to study film, doesn't want to put in extra work on the gun, at practice, stay after practice and put shots up, that, especially a big guy, that is the most difficult thing. And over the years, I've done that. And years ago, of course, it's not relevant to what Penny's doing. At Berkeley Church in Nazarene, there was a kid named Kalarn who was 10, who was legit 5'8". Every other 10-year-old in the gym was sub 5 foot. And so I'm watching him, and his mom comes down and says, well, they won't give him the ball. No, they're just shooting prior to practice. I said, ma'am, he's the biggest ass in the gym. He's got a rebound. You know what I'm saying? So coaching a kid like that is difficult. Now they are playing him, 35 minutes a game? And he's got ability, and then sometimes, I don't know, guys desire to play. And in this day and age, and I think that's why it's good for me not to do a team this summer, people sign up, they pay a fee, and they expect their kid to play. And you're hearing Penny talk about AI's, generation of guys who changed the game. The game has changed, and LeBron has changed a lot of it, I think some for the worse. So I don't know. Years ago, Gary, and I'll tell this story, it probably won't sound good, but I'm telling myself all the time. I figure if I tell on myself, then you can't tell on me. So we're playing 8-year-old YMCA basketball, and the rule was when a kid showed up on Saturday, he played a quarter. And I was getting extra practice because I was, and the people that know me, and y'all pray for me, whatever, I was obsessed with getting a W. And so we get into the tournament because this lady would not bring the kid to practice, but bring him on Saturday, had to play him a quarter, and it just burnt my butt. So when we get into the playoffs, they would call me and tell me when we were playing, like next Saturday, next Sunday, whatever. So I would call her and give her the wrong game time. So I know that sounds bad. I know it's wrong. We won the tournament. What does it mean to win a YMCA 8-and-under basketball tournament? Probably nothing. But I think back in the day, shut up, Brad. I think back in the day, people were more obsessed with winning, where today, and you see it in the summer, Gary, these guys play so much basketball, and they play 40 high school basketball games, that during the summer, winning is not always what it's all about. Getting a dunk, getting on YouTube, getting ranked. Where back in the day, it was about getting a W. It was about going in to compete against the New York Gauchos, and teams that wanted to compete and win, in some kind of way, society got away from. And again, you pay now, or if you're playing for a shoe sponsor team, you obviously don't, but you got to pay the travel. But for the parents, unless your kid's really good, then you get your travel paid for. But so some kind of way we got away from. The game has changed. People say, well, kids have changed. I think if you get on kids' ass, they maybe haven't changed. The problem is by the time they get to somebody old like me, nobody has jumped them, and then when you do, they don't respond well. And I know this is not probably scientifically proven, but I know this. When I go in a huddle, if a kid has got a daddy at home and I jump his ass and I rip him up, I'm talking about challenging, he'll look at you in the eye and say, yes, sir. If he's got no dad at home or no male figure really in his life, you'll cripple him. You'll kill him. And then it kills you on the floor. So that's a balancing act I think you have to learn, to deal with. Sean Williams, I couldn't call him out in public, but I could pull him over and grab his jersey and a handful of skin on his ribs and call him all kind of bad names. And he would go out and play. But some guys you can't do like this. So anyway, the game has changed. LeBron has changed it. You see it with Anthony and those guys with New Orleans. So I don't know where it's going, but I turned 59 Sunday, and some of it I'm not happy with. But I do know that these guys are more skilled now than what anybody ever was before, but I don't think they have perhaps the toughness that the guys back in the day had. Penny and them were tough. Elliot Perry was tough. Dwight Boyd was tough. They would go and ride a bus and meet with each other and work out. In somehow kind of way, we've lost that, and I'm not sure why.
It is Keith Easterwood. He's my local basketball expert. He's your local basketball expert. Nation's leading authority, hobos, heroes, and street corner clowns. He knows Sam Sausage yet. Happy birthday. Glad you had a good time out in Vegas, won some money out in Vegas, and I'm going to talk to you again next week.
You know what? To see 59 was a blessing. I pray to God I see 60.
I do, too.
Man, you my
brother.
Guy, Gary.
I'll see you.
See you, Brad.
See you, Keith.
That's Keith Easterwood. Keith Easterwood Show. You can find it Apple Podcast or KeithEasterwood.com. When we come back, our king and savior, LeBron James, was in FedEx Forum last night. He got a triple-double, but his team lost, and then he had an interesting post on Instagram. We'll talk about that next.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
It feels so good as your cost. Brought an alligator, I ain't talking Lacoste. Made me say, like a mix of
Jeff Calkins is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. He is your award-winning columnist, Daily Memphian, host of the Jeff Calkins Show. We'll get back into Tiger basketball conversation, discuss Penny's quote about Kevin Davenport. Jeff Calkins will be here a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
Our king and savior LeBron James was in Memphis last night inside FedEx Forum playing against the Memphis Grizzlies. And even though the Lakers are in a playoff push, and that playoff intensity has been activated by LeBron James, he explained a few games ago. And the Lakers really needed a win coming off of a loss at New Orleans. They lost again, 110-105. LeBron got a triple-double, but his team lost. Now they're 29-31 with just 22 games remaining. They are three games back of the Spurs for the eighth spot in the West. But they are also trailing Sacramento, which is a game back of the Spurs, and they're tied with the Timberwolves. So it's not like they just got to catch the Spurs. They've got to jump other teams as well. And for whatever it's worth, the 538 NBA blog now gives the Lakers only an 18% chance to close this season well enough to make the Western Conference playoffs. It has them projected to finish at 40 wins, which is going to be four short of the projected cut line to make the Western Conference playoffs, which means we really might be watching in the NBA playoffs without LeBron James for the first time since 2005. And I'm sure he's surprised by this, because when you have been as successful as he's been throughout his career, you know, always being able to drag whatever group of idiots you've got on your team, not only to, you know, the playoffs, but to the NBA finals, you know, year after year after year after year, you just assume that you'll be able to do it next year too. Why wouldn't you? Part of it is that he missed 18 games before the All-Star break, and the Lakers were terrible, and all the games count the same, so that hole was dug. But part of it is, like, maybe you can't do that anymore. Maybe you can't just drag a group of idiots to the playoffs the way you've you've done when asked to do so previously in your career. You know, maybe you are not that version of LeBron James anymore. Like, all of these things are on the table right now. I saw somebody last night tweet, we need to stop calling LeBron James the best basketball player on the planet because it's not true anymore. And I don't know whether that's true or not, but that is something people are starting to at least wonder about. You know, I thought the Lakers would be in the playoffs, even as recently as last week when we discussed it when I was hosting Time to Shine with Evan Washburn. I thought the Lakers would be in the playoffs because if you looked at their winning percentage in games with LeBron James before the All-Star break, they were winning games at like a 58% rate. And if they could match that, it was going to get them to right around 43, 44 wins. And if they could do anything better than that, they would probably be in the Western Conference playoffs. And yet they immediately go out and lose a game to an Anthony Davis-less New Orleans team, and then they lose to a Jaren Jackson Jr.-less Grizzlies team. And, you know, you take two projected wins and turn them into losses, now you're in a real, real bad spot. So it does appear that LeBron James is going to be watching the NBA playoffs this season. Regardless, even after another disappointing loss, he went on Instagram last night and posted a graphic celebrating the fact that he's the only player now in history to be in the top 10 all time in points and assists. And listen, nobody is a bigger LeBron James fan than I am. You can't do that.
No, not last night.
You can't celebrate individual accomplishments when your playoff hopes are being flushed down the toilet.
No.
You just can't. It's just a bad look. No. When I was talking to Jeff about it earlier today, it would have been like Jeremiah Martin scoring 41 points in the second half at USF, then jumping on Instagram and being like, 41, baby!
Yeah.
You know, woohoo! Yo, man, you lost the game. And, you know, Jeremiah was even – he couldn't – if you could go back to all of the questions being asked to Jeremiah after he had that incredible performance, you know, he was saying, quoted, you know, it's hard to even celebrate it because, you know, we lost the game. We came up short. You know, yeah, I just scored 41 points and a half. No other college basketball player in the country has done that this season. Incredible achievement, but, like, I don't feel good about it because we just lost. And then here's LeBron James celebrating an individual accomplishment after a second straight loss that is severely lowered the chances of the Lakers being in the playoffs. Just a weird look. If I were his advisor, I would have said, yeah, you're going to want to delete that one before it gets too much traction. But he still got it up as of this moment, and I guess he's still the
king. That's what she said!
Story number two.
Meantime, the Pelicans played again last night. Anthony Davis was in the starting lineup.
Come on, Pelicans!
They benched him for the entire fourth quarter, and they lose 111 to 110. So this accomplishes two things. A, you protect your asset. You limit his minutes. You know, the fewer minutes he plays, the less likely he is to be injured in a way that could affect his trade value. So that's good. And then also, once you know you're not going to the playoffs, then you're trying to have the best lottery odds you can have. And taking L's are better than taking W's. And so I love the way New Orleans is handling this situation. They're just totally sticking it to Anthony Davis. As they should. You know, like I've said many times, he screwed up their franchise now by wanting out of New Orleans before the trade deadline when he still got an entire another year on his contract to publicly proclaim he wants a trade. And not just a trade anywhere, but to L.A. And I know that he didn't say that, but his representation said it. It wasn't said without his approval, I promise you. And to do that, it just wrecks the New Orleans franchise. And if I were running it, just like I said when it happened, I would have, on a dime, went from somebody who would literally do anything for Anthony Davis to somebody who won't do a thing for Anthony Davis. You want to play in fourth quarters? Well, we're not going to. Like, I wouldn't play him at all. And I would risk the fine and just be willing to pay the fine. But they obviously didn't want to go down that path with the NBA. So they are playing him, but they're not playing him on back-to-backs. They're not playing him the same type of minutes. And last night they literally set him down in the fourth quarter. They did not let him get off the bench.
Yeah.
And he was bothered by it afterward. Mostly said the right things, but acknowledged that he wants to play in the fourth quarter. But the Pelicans are now doing what's best for the Pelicans.
Yeah, you did this, Anthony Davis.
Without any regard for what's good for Anthony Davis, and that's exactly what the Pelicans ought to be doing.
Story number three.
Really neat moment last night at Staples Center. Clippers were playing the Mavericks, and the Clips were up like 121, 112, final 10 seconds, and the game's over. You just dribble out the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And Doc Rivers calls a timeout. And then he goes and grabs the microphone and says, you know, Dirk Nowitzki, one of the greatest who has ever played, and sort of prompts the Staples Center crowd to give Dirk a standing ovation. And Dirk, like, almost started, like, tearing up there because
yeah.
it's not something you see very often. Afterward, Dirk was asked about it. He said, it was sweet. I'm really appreciative. He said, at first I was like, why is Doc calling a timeout? What's he doing with 9.4 seconds left? What's he up to? And then he grabbed the mic. I didn't really understand much, but that was really humbling. That was an emotional moment. Just an incredibly nice gesture on behalf of Doc Rivers, because Dirk is one of the greatest to ever play, and to encourage, to take a moment, like actually pause the game with a timeout and encourage your fans to acknowledge the greatness of this player who is probably standing on a court in front of them for the last time. Just a cool moment. So shouts to Doc Rivers.
Story number four.
Trae Young went big again last night, 36 points and 8 assists in a 119-111 loss to the Houston Rockets. It was down in Houston, and I know the Hawks aren't on TV a lot because they're terrible and they're the Hawks, but last five games, Trae Young's averaging 26 points, 9.4 assists, and shooting 48% from three-point range. His last five games are 36 points, 8 assists, 23 points, 8 assists, 30 points, 10 assists, 25 points, 10 assists, 16 points, 11 assists, and the Hawks are 2-3 on those games. And so if you go back to draft night, I was on record, and I'll forever be on record. It doesn't mean I'll be right, but I will forever be on record. I wanted the Grizzlies in that moment to draft Trae Young, not Jaren Jackson Jr. And in summer league, and maybe even early in the season, it looked like I was way wrong about that, because Jaren Jackson Jr. looked a certain way, and Trae Young was struggling. But he's not struggling anymore. I mean, he is fantastic. 36 points, 8 assists last night. Last five games, 26 points, 9.4 assists, shooting 48% from three-point range, shooting 88% from the free-throw line. I'm not saying that it's clear now that the Grizzlies should have taken Trae Young over Jaren Jackson Jr. I'm not suggesting that at all. What I'm saying is that conversation, that debate, is a lot closer than maybe some people allowed it to be in the summer and earlier in this season. Again, maybe at one point it looked to you to be clear-cut. The Grizzlies got the best player, and maybe it'll look that way at the end of this year and next year and 20 years from now. But it's much closer than I think some people realize. And I promise you, in Atlanta, if you told them they could switch it,
no,
they wouldn't do it.
No.
They'd keep Trae Young. I think the Grizzlies would also keep Jaren Jackson Jr., so it'd be a non-starter. But
he's exciting, though, Gary, and he's healthy.
But the Hawks wouldn't undo what they did, even if the Grizzlies also wouldn't undo what they did. Jeff Calkins coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.